This is the Matters of Influence podcast, creating awareness and alignment today to become your best self tomorrow, with your hosts, Debbie Frapp and Terry Foster Nowlin.
Hello, everyone. Hey, Debbie, and hello, Valerie.
Hello, hello. Excited for today.
I know. I am too. I'm really excited. You know, I could go all over this. Listen, we are honored and thrilled to be able to take a few minutes and talk to who everyone knows as Miss Val, especially in the gymnastics world, you know, which I have a passion for because of my daughter. And Miss Val, Valerie Condos Field, has written a book called Life is Short, Don't Wait to Dance. Mm-hmm. And she is known for her UCLA Athletic Hall of Fame Coach of the Year. And she was a 7-time NCAA championship coach in the field of gymnastics. And she's got an amazing story around that. And we're going to talk with her a little bit about that today, along with others. But the title of today's podcast is Championing Others Matters. Debbie and I had a recent convention that we were at, and we were blown away by the authenticity and the inspiration that Miss Val brought to the room that day. Mm-hmm. And we came back and said, we have to expose her to our world and Absolutely. Anybody that is going to listen. We've got this ready to be launched and out immediately, but I have to plug her book. So first go to Amazon and order her book. She doesn't know I'm going to do that. Life is Short, Don't Wait to Dance. And download that and listen to it or order it and have it. But thank you, Miss Val, for being here with Debbie and I today.
Thank you so much for having me. I remember meeting you so vividly at the conference we were at. Your energy was just, I think I said yes before you even got the ask out. You were like, would you be, I'm like, yes.
Wow. Love that. I love that.
I wish everybody responded that way. Anyway, maybe I'll learn today how to make that happen.
There you go. Cool.
All right. So Debbie, you want to start off?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that was so fascinating to me is your tenacity. I'm sure that there's some other words to use, and just your confidence in moving forward. Okay. And I would love for you to just share just a little bit of your story around how you became this amazing, I believe, Pac-12 Coach of the Decade is one of the titles you have. And I mean, your accolades, of course, speak for themselves, but you've got an interesting pathway and an interesting story of how you got there. And I'd love for you just to share that story, because I think it's inspirational.
Thank you. I'm gonna put a humble brag out there for a minute. It was actually Coach of the Century, which I laughed so hard at, because I'm like, does that just mean I've been around a really long time? Like, I think I was voted that because I was around longer than anybody else. But that's my humble brag there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, when you read off all those accolades and 7 national championships and coach of the year and blah, 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 blah. The funny part to me is, and I still giggle about this, is I was a ballerina. I've never done gymnastics a day in my life. I got to UCLA as their dance coach and choreographer for the gymnastics team. I was in school when I graduated. The athletic director just called me in her office and asked me to be the head coach. And UCLA was a great team. It was a powerhouse, but they just hadn't won a championship. So she wanted to make a change. And I laughed out loud and I said, do I need to remind you? I don't know the first thing about gymnastics. And she looked at me. We called her the ice queen. She looked at me and she just said, I trust that you'll figure it out. And that's all I got. And so, Debbie, when you use the word tenacity, I think that really rings true, because I love the word tenacious. I loved coaching athletes that were tenacious, because in our world, we talk about shortening the distance between failure and recovery.
Love that.
And so when you're talking about someone who's tenacious, they don't spend a long time between making a mistake and recovering with a pity party. You know, I suck. Why me? Why am I here? They hate me. I'm not as good as comparison. People that are tenacious just, and you look at the great athletes in the world or great humans that have achieved greatness. They don't look at failure, quote unquote failure, as something to take personally. They look at it as information.
Absolutely.
And so as I was trying to figure out how to coach in a world of athletics that I knew nothing about, I grew up on stage. Mm-hmm. I think you nailed it, Debbie. And I've never had somebody call me tenacious before, but as you said that, I was like, yeah, because as you can imagine, I made 100 mistakes a day. If I would have had a pity party in between all of that, oh my goodness, I wouldn't even gotten up in the morning.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had time for anything else, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I heard Ryan Leake last week, and one of the things that he talked about, he said, failure is an event. It's not an outfit. So stop wearing it. And I loved that.
Yeah.
I loved that. And you're the epitome of that. So wonderful. Wonderful. Another question that I have, I heard a definition of legacy. Legacy was more about it's not what we've accomplished, that it's actually what others accomplish because of you. Mm. And I'd love for you to kind of take that context of the definition in mind, and what would you identify your legacy being to date, and what do you hope that it is in the future?
That's a great question. I shifted my coaching philosophy early on in my head coaching career from focusing on winning I looked at the world of gymnastics. I looked at my job. It's like, what is really important here? Because it can't be just about winning, because winning is just about bragging rights. Like, who cares? I got very excited when I realized sport is a masterclass in learning really tough life lessons that you don't learn in the classroom. Mm. And my classroom was the gym. And I literally saw, as I helped each one of my individual student athletes, now the word individual, I didn't try to make cookie cutters, right? I didn't try to make good, loyal soldiers. I wanted to help each of them develop their superpowers. And I literally, the last few years of my coaching career, when somebody asked me, oh, what do you do for a living? I'm like, I develop superheroes. Mm-hmm. And I actually believe it. I developed these young women into superheroes. My legacy as they're now out in the world, making the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And the 7 national championships and the rings and all the jewelry, that's just fun.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's not changing the world. We're changing the world. My legacy is still changing the world, even though I've retired, by all these superheroes that are out there making the world better.
Love that. Love that. Harry, I'm going to turn it over to you. I don't know how you
I'm over here taking notes.
I know,
taking
notes. Right, exactly.
Even though Tara is going to do our show notes, I'm over here taking notes.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to what you just said about the superhero mindset. I'm going to segue a little bit because I've got a couple of other questions. From the story that I heard you tell, and I know this from experience, you didn't get superhero mindsets when they walked into your gym or when they walked, like you said, into your classroom. I love that you're calling it your classroom. So what do you think the key component was that helped them shift from possibly not being a superhero to being a superhero?
Well, that's fabulous. Again, fabulous question, because most gymnasts that we got, they were at a very high level, an elite level, and they had been coached to be compliant, good, loyal soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part of it is our sport. You know, I don't blame the coaches for this. Part of it is our sport is so technically difficult that if you don't take them at a very young age and get them to focus razor sharp, they can get seriously injured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you don't want them in the gym really having a lot of fun, because at that age, they can't shift from fun to focused.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get athletes, student athletes coming in, and they were, I would say, militant. Mm-hmm. And when I would ask them questions about their gymnastics, they wouldn't answer me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them said, as the year went on or so, they would say to me, you know, Ms. Val, when you asked me, I thought I would get in trouble if I answered.
Wow.
And so the component that I keyed into was earning their trust. How do you earn their trust? By treating them as humans and not just as a commodity that can help me win another national championship. And then what is one of the key components of earning someone's trust? That is giving them the gift of, when they speak, listening. And not just listening with your ears, but listening with all your senses. I think that really values, that gives someone a sense of value when you listen to them with all your senses. Mm-hmm. Because as I said, when we were speaking in my keynote, most of us, when someone else is speaking, we're thinking of the next thing that we want to say. Mm-hmm. And what I have found, first of all, listening is a skill. It's not something that you're born with. Our sports psychologist helped me with a lovely little Wordle thing to remind myself, when you rearrange the letters that spell listen, it spells silent. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can truly listen is by silencing your mind. Mm-hmm. And what I found in practicing this is, when I do silence my mind, I'm actually able to formulate a better response. Mm-hmm. Because it truly is a response to what they are saying and how they are saying it to me, versus just listening to them talk and then me spewing what I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. And so I'm going to take, you know, there are broken people in the world in every business right now. And one of the things that I tied back into what you're saying just now, again, possibly from what I heard a few weeks ago, was the fact that you were able to take the people that didn't know they were even broken and refine them into a different human. And I would say, in the workplace today, if you were running another business and not coaching, how would you take that same application that you did so successfully at UCLA inside of another business as a coach, as a leader?
Mm-hmm. I think it boils down to relationships. Mm-hmm. I think that it boils down to, and when you talk about having a relationship, like when I would talk with coaches about this, they go, I don't have time to have relationships or develop relationships with my student athletes. I'm like, yeah, you do. It takes literally all, it can be as simple as when you see them in the hallway, just sticking your hand out or putting your hand on their shoulder and just looking them in the eye and saying, how are you doing today?
Yeah.
And when I would ask that question to my student athletes, inevitably they would answer about gymnastics, how they did in the gym. Mm-hmm. And I would let them talk. And then I would say, you know what, honey, if you want to talk about gymnastics, that's fine. But I asked you how you are doing. Mm-hmm. And so you start developing that relationship. In hindsight, when I look back on my career, I mean, obviously hundreds of student athletes I worked with, there were a few that I didn't connect with. I didn't have, like, we had a rub to this day. You know, they're not Miss Val fans. And I look at why, and it's because we never developed a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I had, as you can imagine, I had thoroughbreds on my team that were total divas. And I remember Jamie Dancher was an Olympian. She's like one of the best gymnasts that's ever done the sport. She was a total pain in the but okay, and questioning everything I did.
Yeah.
And but I loved it. And every once in a while I'd say, Jamie, you can ask me anything you want as long as it's respectful. You ask it respectfully. And she would question everything. Yeah. And but we had a relationship. It may have been contentious, but it was a relationship.
Yeah.
And so if I was gonna go, you know, it's funny you asked me that, Terry, because somebody asked me the day what you miss. I'm like, I would love to coach another team because I know so much more now that I'm done. You know, it's like Coach Wooden always used to say, it's what you learn after you've learned everything that matters.
Yeah.
And I would take the time to make people know they are unique, they are valued, and our puzzle, you know, it was UCLA Gymnastics, our puzzle with their little puzzle piece, if we took that piece out, our puzzle is no longer complete.
Mm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
now, absolutely. We always want to take the application. You mentioned it earlier that, you know, sports, and I can't remember how beautifully you said it, but, you know, the idea of sports is basically the foundation of everything else. And I know the young women that you built discipline in and through by using relationships to get there. I mean, this sport is so well defined. I mean, you've got to do one thing if it's just moving a finger in a hand to make an adjustment mm-hmm. on a bar, or the speed at which you run down the vault path. You do that over and over and over and over and over and over again. And that's what your whole world becomes. And I can't imagine what that would be like if we applied those kind of principles in a healthy way inside of most of our businesses. So,
yeah. Well, I even think that, you know, if I was running a business, I would think of myself as, I would think that I would be running a team sport, because mm-hmm. in gymnastics, part of the great thing about gymnastics is there's nobody to pass the ball to.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start getting nervous up on balance beam. Part of the great lesson for a gymnast to learn is you got to be able to compose yourself and figure out how to finish.
Yeah.
So I had a lovely conversation with Kobe Bryant, and about an hour conversation. It was about a year before he passed. And we were talking, and I said, Kobe, a basketball player came up to me last week and said, I had the toughest sport because there's nobody to pass the ball to. And Kobe said, what's wrong with that? I don't ever want to pass the ball. But the truth is, when Kobe was scoring 70 points a game, the Lakers were not winning national championships, world championships. It wasn't until he started passing the ball and being a part of something greater than himself that they started as a team winning.
I love that.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. She's looking for a team to coach.
Yeah.
I am looking for a team to coach, people.
You know, speaking of coaching, I loved listening. I think it was in chapter 7 of your book. I'm not all the way there yet. I think I'm on chapter 8. You talked about a time in which you had a period of time, and I can't remember if you said it was 3 years or 5 years, where you had not won a national championship, and you sought out an actual leadership coach, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I would love to, what was it about that? Cause I found it fascinating that you went to a leadership coach and not to somebody else to say, hey, how do I get these gymnasts to do better to win the national championship? So I loved that idea. Would love to know what was it about that helped you level up both professionally and personally?
Part of it was that I was so used to just asking for help, because when I started, like I said, I knew nothing.
Right.
Which was a great gift to me, because mm-hmm. I had to ask 100 questions a day.
Yeah.
But he, if you were to ask him, and he teaches C-suite executives, you know, all over the world, he said to me, he says, he loves telling the story, because I just cut to the chase. He said, this was the phone call. I said, hello. And this person said, hi, my name is Valerie Condos Field. I'm the head coach of the UCLA Gymnastics team. We've not won our championships in 5 years. And I'd love to work with you to find out if it's because of me.
Wow.
And he was like, he said, the fact that I just knew what I wanted, I had clarity, and I was throwing myself under the bus. He was like, okay, I can work with this person.
Wow. I love that. The vulnerability that it takes to do that, and just the openness and the willingness.
Another thing that I did very, very, very well is I hired really good people. Mm. I made sure that we had coaches meetings all the time. I never made a decision in a vacuum, in a bubble. It was always with a comprehensive decision with the staff. And when we were at a place, it happened our last national championship, 2018, halfway through the meet, we weren't doing so hot. We were like second to last place. Mm. And my assistant coach asked me if he could address the team. And he gave this most empowering speech, and you could just see their mind shift.
Yeah.
And fast forward, we end up winning the national championship. And I believe that was one of the biggest reasons why. And my same leadership coach, his name's Buster Mobley, he said to me, he said, there are very few leaders that will be vulnerable enough and humble enough to pass the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a, especially in a situation like that,
right.
Because when you're in,
there's a lot at
when,
stake.
When the stakes are at the highest, the leader is supposed to have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I trusted the people whom I hired.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I really didn't have that great of something to say to the team to pump them up. And I could see my assistant coach's eyes. He did. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Wow. Love that. I love that. If you were to kind of think about some of your big, I mean, you've already talked about a lot of lessons that you've learned, and there's the opportunity to ask a lot of questions, be vulnerable, know what you don't know, hire great people. What do you think some of your greatest lessons have been to learn, and maybe some of the more painful lessons to learn?
Early on, the most painful lesson that I had to learn the hard way was that my sense of humor, my snarkiness, was hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I said to the student athletes, but that's not my intention to be hurtful.
Yeah.
It's not my intention to make you feel less than. It was. And so it really didn't matter what my intention was. My snarkiness was hurtful.
Mm.
And I had a choice. I could change. I didn't have to change. I was a leader. They're not going to fire me. You know, they were doing great. But was my intention to make them feel less than? Absolutely not.
Right.
So I got to do something different. And that was curbing, making sure that my, everything that came out of my mouth to them was instructional. It could be fun, but it needed to be instructional. And once it crossed a line to being personal, that's when it was no longer okay.
Mm. Wow.
So I'm just curious, did they like come up to you and go, Miss Val, you're snarky? Or like, how did you learn? Like, right? Sometimes we have to have people be brutally honest with us. And, or did you say, how am I not getting through to you? Like, be brutally honest. Like, did you open that up, or did they just know they could come to you and tell you?
God loved them. They asked me for a team meeting. And I got really excited because I'm like, ooh, I love team meetings. Let's sit around and talk, right? And for 2 solid hours, every single student athlete in that room gave me example after example of things that I had said that were hurtful and demeaning. And imagine being the leader and sitting through this. Like after the third person, I want to go, okay, I got it.
Right.
I'll go think about it and change. But yeah. I had to give everybody the courtesy to speak and the respect to speak. That was so hard.
Can imagine. Yeah.
It was like an intervention.
100%. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, it turned out to be a gift, even though it was painful, because oftentimes we don't know how our behavior is being experienced by somebody else.
Right.
And you had enough respect and to give each of them a voice and to let them say it, because it would have been real easy for others to have said, yeah, same thing. But they,
you
gave them a voice and gave them permission to have that.
Right. And what I found was that just giving them that time, it empowered them. You could see them sitting taller.
Sure.
Something else that I told them after that was, I said, I hear you and I'm going to be making some changes. Change doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
But I want to come up with like our secret word, our safe word. And that is when I show up and like that look on my face or my energy I'm giving, and you're feeling that it's not being supportive, it's negative. One of my student athletes said, you know, how do you want us to handle this in that situation? I said, don't come up to me and say, hey, are you okay? You know, or what's going on? Or Miss Val, you look like you got resting bitch face on again. I said, let's just do this. Let's like the secret handshake. Put your hand on my shoulder and just come up and say, hey, Miss Val, you good? Can I do anything for you? That will be my trigger that I need to go give myself a timeout.
Cool.
Mm, I love that.
What a valuable.
And so that wasn't, The thing was, it was respectful.
Yeah.
They didn't embarrass me in front of the team. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me then to go, okay, check. I got it. I'm going to go give myself a timeout. I'm going to go out and get a drink of water, or I'll be back. And I would go like take like maybe a lap around the gym, and then I'd come back in.
Yeah. Wow. So cool.
Yeah. I want to share one thing that I don't think that I did. One metaphor that something that we were talking about just now reminded me of. And I think I love this metaphor. That's why I want to share it with you.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I would tell our team when we were talking about a team and how I told you I wanted to coach a team and not just individuals.
Yeah.
I use the metaphor of a trampoline, and a trampoline's job, the whole purpose of a trampoline is to handle adversity.
Hmm.
The tighter the stronger the threads and the tighter woven those threads are, the more adversity the trampoline can handle. So every single one of my student athletes and coaches are a thread in that trampoline. Mm-hmm. And our job is to make sure that our threads are healthy, that we're doing everything during the day to stay healthy and strong and confident emotionally, mentally, physically, and then also to help make our teammates' threads healthy. Mm-hmm. And so I would always at the beginning of the season, put my hands, like thread my hands together, but loosely together. And then I would say our job, we have 4 months until we start season, competitive season. And then I would move my hands really tightly close together, is to get that trampoline bed as tightly knit and as healthy as possible. And ever since I first came up with that metaphor, it was really cool. When the girls would be on the floor and someone would do something great or whatever, like they would put their hands together and they would lock their fingertips together. Yeah.
Love that. Cool. Love that. What a beautiful metaphor.
That is a great metaphor. Never heard that about a trampoline.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to write that one down.
Absolutely. Love that.
Yeah. So I've got one more question. I know we're getting towards the end. Right. As we're thinking about, Debbie, you brought up legacy, right? And you know, that's one of my value words, but in everyone's thinking of how they want to leave legacy, you've already done that, Ms. Fowl. The athletes that came through your organization and you've created that, now I'm going to use that a lot, like the trampoline theory where they're woven together. You've probably created some amazing adult humans that are making a big difference in the world.
Superheroes. Yeah.
Yeah. Superheroes. Go back to that. Is there any one instance that you could share as an example of someone that has come through you? You've got many, but are there some of the ones that you could share that make you the most proud? They don't have to be the ones that have gone to the Olympics, right? They're great business people, more than likely, all of them.
Yeah, I could tell you literally 4 hours worth of stories of all different levels. I'll just share, because I just wrote a letter of recommendation for her right before this. So she's fresh on my mind. Caitlin Ohashi, that's not who I'm talking about, although she was adorable.
She's wonderful. So fun.
Yeah, go watch her YouTube.
Watch her YouTube.
250 million views.
Amazing.
Caitlin was the it girl that season. And one of the reporters came up to her one day and just said, who is the most inspiring teammate on your team? We had 2 gold medal Olympians on our team that were just stellar. And Caitlin said, I know that you're going to think I'm going to say one of our Olympians. It's actually Sarah Taubman. And the reporter said, who? And Caitlin said, exactly, Sarah who? And Caitlin went on to explain, yeah, Sarah is a walk-on athlete. She was told by Miss Val when she was walking on, she'd probably never compete. And if she doesn't compete, she's not going to travel. She's going to miss out on a lot of that team fun. But Sarah didn't care. She decided to come to UCLA anyway. And Caitlin said, Sarah is the most inspiring person on the team because every single day she walks in with so much appreciation, enthusiasm, and gratitude for what she's been given to be a part of this team. Caitlin said, she makes me not take everything that I have that comes easily for me for granted.
Wow.
Sarah Taubman, whom nobody knows, made this superstar Caitlin Ohashi better simply by showing up with appreciation, effort, and attitude.
Wow.
Mm.
That's a beautiful story.
That's a beautiful mm-hmm. story. And yeah, value, everyone on the team has values, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And the important part of that story is so many people in that position don't think they have value.
Right.
Very true.
But the ones that are struggling, you know, champions are made through the struggle. Mm-hmm. Caitlin Ohashi didn't have to struggle with gymnastics because she already had everything when she came here. But yeah. Sarah Talman struggled every, she was of such a value to our team. And she never competed a day in her life. Mm. Oh, or in her UCLA life.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. So as we wrap this up, if you could just, you've got so much advice and so many things that you could offer. If there was just one thing that you want people to walk away from as they listen to this, that you could pour into, what would you tell them?
Do we have another 45 minutes? No. I would tell them that every single thing that we do in life is a choice. Every choice mm-hmm. we make has numerous repercussions. And as a dancer, I've always said, choreograph your life. Choreography is not moves to music. Choreography is any intentional movement. And any intentional movement starts with our thoughts, which are intentional. So I just would invite your listeners to be super intentional with the choices you make in life, starting with your thoughts. And I want you to take inventory. As much grace that you give your friends and your family, mm-hmm. I want you to give yourself the same grace. Mm-hmm. And so when you're struggling or when you've done something wrong and you want to beat yourself up, pause and think, how would you be talking to your best friend or a family member in this, and talk to yourself the same way?
Mm-hmm.
Let's not go through life with a victim, I suck mentality, because it's not helping us serve the world.
No.
We can't serve the world from that place. We have to fuel our light to serve the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the way that you use perspective, and we didn't even get to talk about that today with your health battle and how you changed and reframed your appointments to get healthy. I mean, there's so much there to even talk about too. That's a part of that as well.
And that was the choice.
Well, they can go get the book then.
I know.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. Get the book. Honestly, it's I have it on Audible and I absolutely, I love it. When I get in my car, I always turn things on. I call it my university on wheels whenever I'm traveling or doing anything.
And, I like that.
Yeah, it was. So I've loved it. The only bad part is it's hard to take notes as you're driving.
Yeah. And
so you should be careful around that. So I'll and re-listen to it again when I have the opportunity to.
Okay. So I just want to share one last thing.
Yeah.
So my co-author, when we were writing the book, I got halfway through it. I said to him, I can't publish this book. He goes, why? I said, because people are going to think that they're going to glean all this wisdom from a 7-time national champion. And they're going to realize in reading the book, I'm a total whack job. And he says to me, Miss Val, and he was really serious. He goes, you are a whack job. That's why you have to write the book, because you give all of us permission to release our inner whack jobs. I was like, yeah. Okay, I'll write the book.
I love that.
And you, just some gratitude too, as we close, you know, we think about the immediate people we affect. We don't think about those people and their people and their people and their people. And it goes on and on. I mean, we're sitting here wrapping this up and Tara is texting me going, oh my gosh, you're talking to Miss Val right now. I mean, you don't even know the impact that you've made on other college gymnasts during your time that you didn't even know were out there.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for all of those people that you don't even know about. So
yeah, thank you. Absolutely.
You're welcome.
It's a ripple effect.
It is.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. We appreciate it. Get the book, people. You will not hesitate it. And I think somebody told me one time, I said something about how I was crazy. And they said, well, crazy, only crazy can see crazy. So we're all good whack jobs. I love
whack jobs.
All right, let's close this out.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.